Okay, so welcome everyone to today's call on the National Core Indicators Aging and Disabilities. I'm Kelsey Walter. I work at the National Association of States United for Aging and Disabilities. And with me today on the call, we have Julie Bershatsky at Human Services Research Institute, who heads up the NCIAD work at the HSRI, and is also the head researcher there. So today, we'll be hearing mostly from Julie, discussing specifically sampling approaches and issues about building the samples in the states to be included for the NCIAD. So I'll go ahead and let Julie get started. And at the end of the call, we will unmute the lines and let participants ask questions. So if you have questions, hold them till the end. You'll be on mute until I unmute the lines. Thanks. And Julie, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Kelsey. So thank you for introduction. I think most of you at this point know both Kelsey and me and the project, so we're not going to go through the background of the project again, although if you would like to know more and you're not familiar, let us know in the end, and we'll be happy to give you any more information, any information that is needed. But just a little bit, as you know, it's a joint project between Nashua at HSRI and NASDES, the DD side of, or the DD parallel of Nashua. It is an expansion of the project that is currently exists for the intellectual and developmental disability community called MCI, just National Core Indicators. Standard measures that are used across states and hopefully programs to assess the outcomes of services provided. So not just, it's not just about the process of providing those services, it is really about the outcomes of providing the services. So the impact of services on quality of life, things that are important to two people and their families. And NASHROD has really been Nashua and the member states have been really spearheading the effort to expand the original NCI tool and the original NCI project to include populations of older adults and people with physical disabilities. The way that the project is going to work is we're going to have many, many states who are going to want to participate. And the ones that the state decides to participate, it's going to be a fairly involved, well, not fairly involved in the sense of the work, but there's going to be a lot of thinking that will need to happen before you can actually start collecting data. What's going to happen is that each state will need to compile a sample of at least 400 people, and I'll go into into the reasons why it's 400 a little bit later. But it's going to be, you're going to be asked to compile a sample of at least 400 people of older adults and people with physical and other disabilities who are receiving publicly funded services. Then each state will work with HSRI and Nashua to design a sampling strategy. And when I say each state will work with us, I do mean that each state will work with us, hopefully individually, because this call will, or this webinar will cover some of the, just the common overview sampling issues and background things that you need to, that will influence the sampling strategy, but really we would like to tailor the sampling strategy to each state individually and work with you individually to make sure that you are getting the most use out of the numbers that you're going to be putting money into to produce, but also that those samples that you end up with and that all of the states and we ultimately end up with are useful to compare, to ensure valid comparisons across different states and nationally. Each state will work with us individually to design a sampling strategy. Once the sampling strategy is decided on and the sample has been pulled, the state or the contractor at the state will agree on will actually conduct the interviews. And I should mention, again, you probably all know that already, that these are all, at this point, the NCIAD is the consumer survey. So it's an in-person interview with the participant. The state will then compile, or the state or the contractor will compile the final data, share the data with us at HSRI, and then we will have the fun task of interpreting and analyzing the data and providing the both state-specific reports and the national state-to-state comparison reports. Next slide, please. So if we start, since this is a really call about sampling, I just want to go over and some of the things that you really need to start thinking about now. And the basic thing that you really need to start with is who it is that is going to be included in the sample. And the goal, the overarching goal, no matter what sampling strategy you adopt, the overarching goal really is to have a sample and at the end of the day that is going to be representative of your state service system, which is why I stress the importance of working with us to design that sample, because we know that states vary significantly in how their state service systems are put together, who is included, who is being served, how the waivers are put together, all of that. So the actual composition of the sample and how and the design will vary from state to state, but the goal is the same for, I think, each state who's going to participate, and that is to have a representative sample that will reflect people served within the by the state's system. The survey is really designed to work different types of people, regardless of where they live, regardless of what their source of funding is. So you do want to include everybody as much as possible, regardless of where they live. You do want to include people who are on the waivers, both aging and disability waivers, and again, what those waivers are, who they are aimed at, what the eligibility criteria are going to be different state from state to state, but I think just about every state has some sort of aging and disability waiver, so we want to include those. We do also want to include folks who are getting services under the Older American Act. Again, that may differ how it looks from state to state, but the survey was designed to work on those folks. And it's important, I believe, as you as a state, that's important information to have. We would also like to the extent possible, for each state to include nursing home residents, and if there are other kinds of institutional settings where people are being served, include those as well. Now, as you know, we're finishing up the pilot right now, and for the purposes of the pilot, nursing home residents were excluded. But we do know that the survey works for them, and we would like for the states, again, if at all possible, to include nursing home residents during the regular administration of the survey. And also, if the state provides any kind of any services outside of the waivers, Older American Act, nursing homes, the programs that were listed, so if there are any state-funded long-term care services, you probably want to include those as well. Now, we do realize that some states may want to pointedly exclude some of the programs or some of the subpopulations. For example, if there's a lot of pushback from the nursing home providers in the state, then maybe you want to take a year and work on getting access to those folks and not include them in the first sample. In that case, that's fine. We just need to work with you to figure out and to make sure that we know who's being included and who's being excluded, so we can then analyze the data accordingly and make the proper adjustments as much as possible and make the proper comparisons. Now, as you're thinking about who is to be included in the sample, you also need to start thinking about who's to be excluded. And the people, and this is what we did in the pilot, and I think that's the strategy that we're going to go for going forward as well, is that people who are basically not receiving any services, so they may be in the waiver, for example, or in the Older American Act, but they're not actually receiving any active services or are receiving very, very minimal services. So if they're getting case management only, or a variant of case management, or whatever it may be called, or care coordination, whatever it may be called in your state, it probably does not make a lot of sense to include them in the sample. If people are getting Meals on Wheels once a week or once a month and nothing else, it also probably does not make sense to include them in the sample. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so talking is a little bit difficult right now. A priority, if you know that you have a certain number of people or a certain population or a certain program that you know people are getting services, but you have no contact information for them at all, you sort of, as much as you'd like to include them, you probably won't be able to because you won't be able to find them. Also, and this is, we're hopefully going to be able to remedy some of this as the project moves along, but people who you know do not communicate in English, and there will be no available translator, no family members who can speak English, depending on how much effort you want to put into it and how much resources you have available as a state, we are planning to have, at the very least, a Spanish version of the survey available for by rollout, which is going to be in June of 2015. Yes, so in a year, less than a year, we will have at least a Spanish translation of the survey. Possibly, hopefully, a different one is maybe another one or two common languages, but we're definitely not going to be able to do all of the translations that we would like to. Hopefully, as the project moves along, we'll be able to do more, but for now, that's something to think about. Next slide, please. So once you start thinking about who is to be included in the sample, a related issue, it's sort of separate but related, is how big should the sample be. When you think about who is to be included, who is to be excluded, that goes to how representative the sample will be. So will it represent your service system as a state? Given that, then how big do you want the sample to be? I mentioned earlier the number 400, and that is a good, solid number for a state to do. And that is because a sample size of 400 is sort of what we call a magic number. It will produce a good estimate, and when I say a good estimate, I mean an accurate estimate for the state overall, and that will be approximately 95% confidence level, 5% margin of error. Actually, it's going to be a little bit higher than that. So it's going to be a little bit better than that even. That number will work pretty much regardless of how big the population served is in the state. So whether you're serving 3,000 people or 20,000 people, that number will still work. It may seem counterintuitive, but that's just math. Statistical math. Gains as you're increasing the sample size, as your population increases and you're increasing the sample size, you sort of get less and less gain, if not proportional to increasing the sample size. So you will spend more and more money by trying to interview more and more people, but your gains in accuracy are going to be smaller and smaller, so your return is not really worth it. So 400 is sort of, no matter how big your state population is, 400 is a number that you can aim for, that you can be fairly confident that it will give you a good, accurate estimate. Now, if you were thinking about who should be included and who should be excluded, and you also design that 400 to be a representative sample, that will be even better, because now you will have an accurate number that will actually represent who is being served in the state. If you decide to go with a bigger sample, of course, you will, your confidence level will increase and your margin of error will decrease. So you will get an even more accurate estimate for the state. As I mentioned, the return is going to be progressively smaller. But what you may be able to do if you do a bigger sample is also build in then and do estimates within your state. So by regions, by individual programs, by subgroups. You can also oversample some of those. So if you're specifically interested in, say, one region of your state or one program or one type of people, for lack of a better term, you can oversample that group. Next slide, please. And I will talk a little bit more about it later, but just because you oversample one group does not mean that you have to have a huge a sample. But certainly building in a bigger sample will allow you to do more of those within the state, within your state comparisons. Once you figure out who is to be included, who is to be excluded, how big your sample is going to be, then you start thinking about the actual sampling method. And actually, all of these things should be considered at once. I'm using the, first you start with this, then you go to the next topic of consideration as a very loose organizing schema. These are all related and things, so they will all affect each other. What we really want is the probability sampling. So every person in the population has some chance of being selected into the sample, except for those people who you a priori determine that you want to be excluded, like people who are only receiving case management. But everybody else should have some probability of being selected into the sample. The simplest thing to do is to just do a simple random sample where you literally just put together all of these lists and then pick people at random. It generally works and works pretty well. The one danger of that is that if you have rare or small groups of people in the state, they may just be excluded by chance. And if you want to make sure that they are included, and you want to make sure that there's some representation for those groups, then a good thing to do is to do something called a stratified random sample, where you stratify your sample by programs, by groups, and then do a random sample from within each of the strata. Okay? And that will ensure that your rare and small groups are represented. It will also, if you are thinking of oversampling, it will allow for a much easier method of oversampling those groups or programs. Next slide, please. To talk a little bit more about oversampling, as I mentioned, you want to do that, you may want to do that if you're interested in a performance of a specific group or outcomes of a specific group, performance of a specific program or a region. What oversampling really means, and all it means, is that that group is going to be represented at a higher probability than others of the population. It doesn't necessarily mean that the whole sample has to be bigger. So you can still do a sample of 400, and within that sample have, let's say, if you were interested in oversampling, women. I'm not sure why, but if you were interested in oversampling women, you could basically build your sample of 400 in a way that women would make up a larger proportion of that 400 than they do in the population. And then what we would do at the analysis stage when we get your data is develop and apply statistical weights that will then adjust for that oversample and still produce representative state estimates, so the estimate for you as a whole will still be accurate. That means for us to be able to do that, that means that we have to know that you're oversampling, know how you're oversampling, know what the original population proportions were, and know what the sample proportions were. But that's, again, if you work with us, we can figure all of that out as we go. Next slide. To do anything but a simple random sample, so to do like a stratified random sample or an oversample, we do have to know the sizes of populations served in different programs. Not only do we have to know that, we have to know the sizes of those populations after your exclusions. We also have to be able to compile those populations into lists. We have to have the random number generators, but that's easily done. There are all sorts of software available to do that. One thing I should say is that let's say you, as a state, decide to do a sample of 400. When you create your lists, they will be used to compile the sample, and then when you actually compile a sample, you'll need more than 400 in that original sample list, or the what I call the sample of contacts, the contact sample, because you will have a number of refusals, and as we're finding out from the pilot states, you will have a number of people for whom the contact info is not accurate. So what we're recommending at this point is that you'll basically compile about 50% more names and contact points than what you want in the actual final sample. So if you're doing a sample of 400, or if you want to do a sample of 400, compile 600 names and contacts from your different programs. And that should also be done according to the sampling strategy. So if you're doing a stratified sample, then those 600 names should be the ones that are pulled from the stratified lists. Next slide. As you are thinking through all of these things, and I know it can be a little bit overwhelming, but that's why we would like to work with you individually. Really, what should be driving these decisions is how is your state planning to use the data? Are you just interested in having a one set of numbers or one estimate for your state's performance as a whole? Or do you want to drill down and compare program by program, funding stream by funding stream, type of residence by type of residence, diagnoses, whatever it may be? What is the most useful to you as a state? And that really should influence everything else. That should drive the sampling design and sampling strategy. And that is something that is important to think about now, really, as early as you can. And, of course, communicate with us and work with us and communicate with us some more, because if we don't know what you're doing and you don't know what we're doing, then we can't really analyze the data properly, and the utility of this whole thing is going to be much reduced. Next slide. Let's see. something to think about, because I believe that most, if not all, states will have multiple data sources. So because what we want in the sample is people who are receiving services under different funding streams and through different programs, you will most likely, unless you have some sort of a unified system at the state level, you will be drawing your sample from multiple data sources. It could be even if it's a county-based state, like, for example, it could be just not even different programs, but different regions. What you may run into, and most likely will run into, as when you're pulling all of these data sources together, is that the availability of contact info will differ, and the quality of contact info will differ by different program region data source. Not only that, you may find that the refusals rate may differ as well. And that's something that we'll obviously learn as we go. Hopefully the 50% over, the 50% above your sample size contact list should suffice for most of these. Also, as you probably, many of you know, the survey, in addition to the actual face-to-face survey, will include a section that collects some demographic and background and service utilization information that was really used. It's going to be used for reporting, but it's also going to be used for risk adjustment and things like that, and the comparability of the data. It would be easiest if you as a state, when you're compiling the data, get as much of that information as possible from existing records. However, the availability of that information in the data sources will differ according to the data source, and of course the quality of it will differ as well. Folks who are on the waiver, they will probably have a lot more information available in administrative data than, for example, people who are receiving services through the Older American Act. One thing that you can consider is the information that is needed for the survey, even if it's not contained in the main databases, is it contained somewhere else, and can it be easily linked? So, for example, some Medicaid databases may have it. It will be important to collect the missing demographic and background pieces, and we are recommending that is done during the interview itself, ideally at the end of it. We will be working on minimizing the effort required for that as much as possible, but that is something that you'll also need to plan for. Next slide, please. Depending on how you as a state organize the work process and what your arrangement will be, whether you use a contractor or not, most likely you as a state will have to generate the actual lists that the sample will be pulled from. However, depending on how you work with a contractor, in terms of who actually pulls the sample from that list, it could be you as a state or the state staff, or it could be the contractor. If it's a contractor, you will probably have to give them access to identifiable information and administrative databases, which may be, depending on the procedures, you may or may not want to do. If you are, as a state, doing the actual pulling of the sample from the list, then you will be responsible to hand off that sample to the contractor. The sample will by that point contain all the contact info that they will need then to go and find the people and set up the interviews with them. When you're pulling the sample, if you're doing it as a state, you may want to pull the demographic, the available demographic and background info at the same time, which would mean pulling all of that information for everybody who ends up in the sample list. So some of those people will not be interviewed, but you'll be pulling the demographic background info for them anyway. That is actually, that may seem like more work than is needed, but time-wise and effort required, it might actually be easier because it's basically going to be, depending on the system, it's basically going to be one data dump, and the effort is not going to be increased that much more, whether it's 400 people or 600 people. Now, the other option is to generate contact lists, contact people, set up the interviews, get consent if that's required, and then after people are have agreed to be interviewed, then you go back and pull their demographic and background info. That is going to be fewer people that you have to get the info for, but it will likely require more significantly more effort. And again, just like with the contact info and determining who it is that is responsible for actually pulling the sample, it could be you as a state or a state staff, or it could be the contractor. Kelsey, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in Georgia, it was the state staff, and then in Ohio, I think maybe it was the contractor. I don't remember, but states on the DD side, we have examples of states doing both, and it's just about how you want to write the contract and what the responsibilities of the contractor are, and how much access to your data you're willing to give them. But it's certainly an option. I think that's about it in terms of just the general sampling information and background that we wanted to provide. Again, I think the key here is that we would like to start having conversations with individual states who are wanting to participate, working through some of these issues and helping figure out how to, how to best design it for your state. Hopefully this is useful in terms of getting you to start to think about these issues. I guess at this point we'll just open up the lines and have questions or comments or angry responses. And of course you're always if you don't want to ask the question now, if you can't think of a question now and you do want to go back to your state and digest for a minute, just send us emails or get us on the phone later. That's perfectly fine too. So I will have a drink of water now and try to get my voice back.
Great. Thanks, Julie. So I'm going to stop the recording so that people feel more comfortable asking questions, and we'll just keep track of the questions you're asking, and we'll post the answers, too, on the website afterwards. So give me one moment here.